and Furness Show.
You want me to turn it up?
Send your text to 49451 on Seattle Sports Radio 950 KJR.
And welcome in. Here we go on a Thursday edition of the program. Ian Furness with you. Final day in jail. Kevin Shockey, you're not in jail. How are you? Where are you?
I'm doing great. I'm in the Redbox producer's booth, which is not jail, although at times it does feel a little bit like that. But Redbox has the newest movies. They're fresh from the theater. And did you know they're under $2 a night? So head to the box or stream on demand.
I love it. I'm told we have to get to headlines, so let's do that right now, shall we?
Now, from the Star Rentals Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
Headlines this hour brought to you by VenueKings, VenueKings.com. By the way, once again, reminder, let your friends in San Francisco know if they want to go infiltrate SoFi Stadium. VenueKings.com has tickets to the NFC Championship game. Don't let people like Matt Stafford's wife tell you you can't go and there aren't tickets, because VenueKings.com has tickets for you. By the way, more on that tomorrow with John Lund. It's crazy what's going on down there. Let's see. Kraken tonight. Start a road trip. Four games, I do believe. In Pittsburgh, they'll take on Sidney Crosby. Kevin, you ever heard of that guy, Sidney Crosby?
Sidney Crosby. He's a chump. He sucks, and I hope they beat his ass. How was that?
Yeah, I'd take Pittsburgh in the money line. But anyway, Pittsburgh and Seattle, 4 o'clock tonight, 3:30 from Network Central. Benton will get you going with pregame coverage as the Kraken, after a 3-3 homestand, start a four-game road trip tonight. Cougs were winners last night, pounded Utah in college hoops. Tonight we've got college hoops right here on 950 KJR after the Kraken game, Colorado and Washington. 7:30 pregame, 8 o'clock tip-off. Buffs coming off a win against the Oregon Ducks. Ducks, by the way, squashed Washington. But that means nothing, because the Pac-12, middle of the pack outside of Arizona, UCLA, it's a whole lot of when it's all said and done. A bunch of teams have new coaches in the NFL. The Bears, the Broncos, guys you really have heard of. Jacksonville may be hiring Byron Leftwich if they can fire former executive of the Niners, Trent Baalke. That would be funny. We'll talk about all that stuff tomorrow with our buddy Ian Rappaport on the NFL Network. Brad Smith, traded by your friends, the Seattle Sounders, to the Washington franchise. They get a bunch of money back. Kevin, did I see that right? $750,000 in allocation money, I think they call it.
Yeah, yes, $750,000
for Seattle.
That does seem like a lot of money, and he wasn't like significant in their plans, it seemed like.
No, Garth Lagerwey is a great GM. Breaking news. All right, here we go. Let's start the show just after 1 o'clock. Busy show coming up today. 1:30, Aaron Torres. We're moving Aaron Torres. We'll do a lot of college. I like talking all things college sports with Aaron. A lot of college hoops. He's big into college hoops. We've moved him to Thursdays for the rest of the season through the end of the Final Four, because we've got Gary Parrish on Tuesdays. We don't want to double up our college basketball coverage. But Torres will join us coming up, brought to you by your local steel dealers, coming up today at 1:30. I should also remind you, we're about 17 minutes away from your next chance to win $1,000 in our Kraken Cash Contest. That's right.
That was math on the fly, folks.
When you hear the keyword, go to 950kjr.com and enter, and you have a chance to win a grand as well. In addition to that, Kevin, before I go through the rest of the show, because Dave Tomlinson joins us at 2 o'clock, listen closely. Do you have it ready? We're going to give away $50 to Beardsley Public House up there in Bothell. Phenomenal food, great beverages, craft-made beers right on the premises. Also, of course, they got the Wildwood Spirits. Chef John Howie runs the show. That's all I have to tell you. That means it's fantastic in terms of food and beverage. You want $50 to spend up there? Listen closely.
Up to Vince Dunn, the crack into center and back over the blue line. Wenberg, Appleton, he scores! 26 seconds in! Mason Appleton puts the Kraken back up! It's 4-3!
What a huge goal for the Kraken!
The last part is what you need to know. Just that last part.
What a huge goal for the Kraken.
Remember that. What a huge goal for the Kraken. We'll ask you what Dave Tomlinson said coming up at 2 o'clock today. Text in at 49451. Not now, but at 2 o'clock. What a huge goal for the Kraken. Text in at 2 o'clock. You'll have a chance to win $50 to Beardsley Public House when Dave joins us for his weekly visit talking all things Kraken hockey. He is, of course, our Kraken radio analyst on 950 KJR. Kevin. Ian. Help me out here. What's the biggest thing trending today?
The biggest thing trending today? Oh, like all over the world? I don't know. Do we want to talk about the new Supreme Court appointment?
Sports.
I would say that it might very well be the man on my television screen right now. Number 7 for those Pittsburgh Steelers, Big Ben Roethlisberger. That guy?
That's how you say it. That's how you say it.
Roteles Bierger.
you're a beauty. So, you know, what I like to do every day is I'm kind of cruising around, looking at the Seattle Times and Tacoma News Tribune and, you know, what else is going on. Twitter's always like, well, Twitter used to be. I think Mike Ferrari, my old buddy at Como, just is now in the real estate business.
Oh, here it goes. You know, you people.
He's as he just said, it's now turned into the Wordle Twitter headlines. But Twitter usually gives you a little bit of a feel for kind of what, you know, I think just because of who I follow. I think it, depending on who you follow, right? Yeah. Like who you follow on Twitter. But it kind of gives you like a good feel as to what the trending stories are across the country.
Sure.
And what's going on. Now, I should also mention real fast, let me take a side note. We're on till 3:20 today, roughly, 3:20 something.
3:30.
3:30. Whoa, you didn't tell me that. Anyway, Tim Benz will join us at 3 o'clock, and Softy and Fane obviously not going to come in and do like 20 minutes of radio today. So we'll lead you right up to the Kraken game and the pregame show with Ben. But you know, as you kind of look around and what's trending, what's going on out there, and I came across two things. One I thought would be worthy of talking about. The other one I think I'll ignore. But there's two big things trending today. One, I guess Jeff Garcia doesn't like Mina Kimes, and then everyone's coming to her defense, and that's fine. Whether you like her or not, or want to watch her, who cares? But that's like a big deal today because, you know, either love Mina, hate Mina, or you don't care about Mina. I'm probably in the middle.
You are in the minority, it seems. It seems that Mina Kimes has everyone having a very strong opinion about her.
Yeah, it's one way or the other. You love her, you hate her. And you know what? That's probably perfect for what she does for a living. So, but I guess Jeff Garcia, was that the real Jeff Garcia?
It was. That ripped her? Yeah, the former Eagles quarterback. Yeah, Jeff Garcia.
I thought he was a former CFL star. Is he a former Eagle too?
Wait a second. Really? He might be all of those.
Yes. Oh, I did chuckle today, man. Coming to the defense of other media people is always fun. But nevertheless, that was the one thing. I figured we can move on from that. So let's do that because I really don't care.
Good.
The other thing is, say his name again.
Big Benjamin Roteles Bierger.
That guy. He apparently officially retired today, even though, and we'll talk about this with Ben's in Pittsburgh coming up at 3. There's a little bit of Russell Wilson and Ben Roethlisberger. Like, didn't you already retire? Now we're going to do it again. Now we're going to just put a statement out. Like, you know, we'll talk about what those poor guys in Pittsburgh are going through today. But yeah, he made the statement. He's done. He's out. We all knew that. So we move on. But here's what I want to kind of discuss, because I think it's fascinating. I guess you could make the, and I'll ask Tim this. I don't know how long it's been since he's been thought of as a franchise quarterback. Maybe up as recently as last year. They were 12-3 last year. He had a decent year, not a great year. He threw 10 interceptions. His pass rating was so-so, but he did throw 33 touchdowns. So I guess last year, 2020, you know, still have a franchise quarterback. This year, there were a lot of questions about him. He struggled at times. Did lead him to some wins, come from behind wins. In fact, he's got 53 game-winning drives in his career, which is pretty remarkable. I mean, that's
pretty good.
That's pretty damn good. They had a really good defense. He was good enough to get him to the postseason. They needed some help from Jacksonville over Indianapolis, what have you. But here's what I want to kind of bring up today, Kevin. First of all, his name or Russell Wilson's name is going to be associated and is already being associated with Pittsburgh. And, you know, along with Rodgers, Garoppolo, I think David Carr, is it David or Derek? Derek Carr. They're all being associated with Pittsburgh, which is fine. The Russell Wilson part of it, though, is fascinating to me because Russell's got 2 years left. And here's something that we'll discuss with Tim that I think he can, you know, kind of bring back to Seattle. And that is this. The exit plan, the exit strategy, what's next? And there are teams, Green Bay, San Francisco, for example, let's just use those two, that are criticized both by their current quarterback, maybe, although I don't know if Jimmy G ever really criticized it, but certainly Rodgers did. But there's eyebrows raised at times. You have a quarterback, you're paying a quarterback, but you go draft a quarterback. And I'm not saying drafting a quarterback in the, you know, seventh round like Alex Magoo in 2018. No. Draft quarterback, high draft pick.
A quarterback that can play.
Well, and what would you say an investment in a draft pick is? Anything in the first four rounds?
Yeah, I feel like that's almost more generous than it needs to be. I would say three rounds. But yeah, I mean, not a sixth or seventh round pick at least. Okay. Yeah.
Well, first of all, I'm glad you went. So say first three. That's a significant investment.
Yeah.
How many Seahawks quarterback, or how many times have the Seahawks drafted a quarterback in the first three rounds, do you think? Top of your head.
Well, I'm not a Seahawks historian, so I'm going to do.
No, but just, I mean, they've been in business for 50 years.
I'll say
45.
Yeah, I'll say four.
Pretty close. Five.
Ah.
Meyer, McGuire, Wilson, Heward, and Green. That's it. Like, for whatever reason,
the
this franchise.
Plant Green?
David Green. David Green, 05, Mike Holmgren. Oh, God, we love you, Mike. But yeah, David Green, who never took a snap in the National Football League. But they have invested very, very little in the year in that position. In fact, only, I think, 17 quarterbacks have ever been drafted by the Seahawks. And out of those 17, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of those, only 9 have ever played a snap in the NFL. I mean, it's really kind of nuts to think about how little they've invested in that position, which I think we'd all agree, right, Kevin, is the most important position in the National Football League.
Yeah, I think that's fair, yeah.
This is not the year to ignore that position. And I think Pittsburgh is the good cautionary tale of why you need to figure out a way. You got to draft somebody. And I think what you said was interesting. Somebody you think that you think can play. And I think if nothing else, you think can come in and be your backup next year. Probably safe to say you're gonna move on from Geno Smith, right? Like, you know, the off-field issue, the DUI going, 96 miles an hour. He still costs a veteran minimum salary, which puts you in seven figures, all those things. You're going to move on from him. And this, I don't know if it's to make Russell uncomfortable, but you got to cover your own ass. You got to cover your own base. And maybe you find a guy in the 2023 draft, if that's how it ends up being, where you trade Russell. But the cautionary tale is kind of what's going to go on in Pittsburgh right now, where they have all these pipe dreams. Well, maybe we can get Aaron Rodgers. Maybe we can get Carr. Maybe we can get Jimmy G. Maybe we can get Russ. Or maybe we're stuck with Mason Rudolph or Dwayne Haskins, right? Like, that's like, those are not great options, because the current guys, first of all, you're going to clear money with Ben leaving. We get that. But they still have a high-priced defense and some other dudes that they're paying money to, wide receivers, et cetera, right? They do have a great running back who's on a rookie deal. That does help them. But you need to have a better exit plan in place. I find it crazy, and we'll ask Mike about this next year, because even Holmgren, you know, he used to say, I like to draft a quarterback in every draft. I have him drafting 1, 2, 3, 4, I believe 4 quarterbacks, maybe 5 that he drafted when he was in Seattle. So not every year did he draft one. And out of those guys, what you just said, Kevin, some of those dudes, you know, Booty and Teal and Kelly, for example, you're going, Kelly. Yeah, Jeff Kelly. Don't you remember him?
Oh, yeah, I totally do.
Those guys were all 6th and 7th round draft picks. So it's, you know, like, the investment was never really there. Hugh talks about it a lot, and I think it's a great point. You have a position at quarterback, and it's like kicker, and it's like punter. God forbid a long snapper, and this is the only organization I think that ever actually drafted one, even though he never played. As Curtis likes to bring up all the time, the Seahawks, when Ruskell drafted the long snapper in 06 or 07, whenever the hell it was. But there's certain positions a guy's not going to give you anything besides that position, right? In other words, you draft a linebacker, a running back, a wide receiver, even a lineman, they can give you something else, whether it's on special teams, field goals, punts, kickoffs, et cetera, right? Sure. They can give you something. They're going to help you on game day. A quarterback's not. Like,
they're holders, Ian.
I don't think any quarterbacks are even holders anymore around the NFL.
I think there are one or two. Backup QBs who are holders.
Because I've kind of watched this the last couple of weeks. Now, it's just the playoff teams, but when Wisnowski, the punter in San Francisco, got hurt a couple weeks ago, it was Juszczyk was the backup holder, for example. And, you know, but nevertheless, I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't use it, first of all. Well, I know why. Because when they practice, they're off to the side.
They're all doing their own thing. Yep.
Yeah, that's why it is. But this is the year you got to draft the quarterback. And It may ruffle some feathers if you make an investment. Let's just use first four rounds, for example, because they have enough needs where they probably need to draft other guys in the second and third rounds. But let's say the first four rounds, they got to go get a guy. They got to get a guy. They got to find a guy, because you don't want to be in the position where if he forces his way out at some point next year, and I don't think it's going to happen this year. The roster bonus kicks into play before free agency. It's $5 million. It's not a lot, but they're not going to. He's here this year. Let's assume he's here. Next year, when he has 1 year left on his contract, that's when it's going to get ugly. That's when it's going to get a little dicey, and that's when it's going to get uncomfortable. There's no guarantee if you trade him next year that you're going to be able to go out and A, get the guy you want in the draft, or B, get a quarterback in return that you feel comfortable with. C, you need a backup quarterback, and you've got to start investing in that position a little bit. And as much as Aaron Rodgers hated the fact that they went out and they drafted Jordan Love, at least they say, hey, we've had a guy in the system for a couple of years. We've got a backup quarterback. You know, he was awful that first game, but they said as the game went on, he got better. Who knows what he's going to be later on? Trey Lance is not... If you really watch the Seahawks game with him when he played that second half, Kevin, he made a couple plays.
Yeah.
And you know what? He made a couple throws. He made one throw. I think it was right down the seam. That was like a fastball. That was like everyone. It was one of those press box moments where he just guys don't make that throw. Like that kind of like guys just don't make that throw. And this is the year, because Pittsburgh is in a hell of a and. We all are going to enjoy this from afar, because nobody in Seattle likes the Pittsburgh Steelers unless you grew up in Pittsburgh. We're going to enjoy this from afar. Hell, if you're a Philadelphia Eagles fan, you're probably going to enjoy it a lot, because I'm sure that you're not big fans of Pittsburgh there either. They're going to be in a bad situation this year, groveling, hoping, praying that one of those guys I just talked about somehow falls into their lap, but at what cost? Remember, they're a playoff team. They got a low draft pick. Two, hoping that maybe Haskins or Rudolph pops, but I think we've all seen enough of Mason Rudolph, right? That's not a guy that's going to lead you to anything in the National Football League. That he screams perennial backup journeyman guy. They haven't had an investment in that product for a long time. Don't be Pittsburgh. You got to go get a guy. Go find a guy. And for whatever reason, traditionally, I mean, these guys drafted Alex Magoo and Russell Wilson, right? That's it. That's the only guys that this organization, because Boykin was a free agent, I believe. So those are the only two guys they've drafted since 2010. Zero investment. And maybe part of it was, Kevin, I don't know. Maybe part of it was they felt they were didn't want to ruffle Russ's feathers.
Well, look, we saw how it seems he reacted when they went and looked at another quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Like looked at one.
Yeah.
And there's also going to be, you know, look, a lot of people give the Packers a really hard time for the fact that they haven't done more to supplement and to add to what they have with Aaron Rodgers right now. So if the Seahawks or any team, if they go out and draft a quarterback, when they have a quarterback, they are going to take crap for it. There's no doubt about it. They always
Absolutely.
Do.
Yeah.
How come you're not adding? You have a quarterback. Why aren't you working to get him more weapons? Why aren't you working to improve the defense while you have a great quarterback? All that sort of stuff. So if anytime you do plan for the future like that, people get all up in their feelings about it.
It's a great point. You know what's funny about what you said? Two things. One is when they did draft a quarterback high, i.e. third round in Russell Wilson, the 75th pick overall, when they did draft him, they had just signed a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
They just invested in Matt Flynn. Now,
yep.
You know, in retrospect, not a huge investment by NFL, but they still had invested. Every one of us that night, I swear, find me the tape, if somebody on our air or someone wrote it that said something otherwise. The very first initial reaction when they made the announcement was Russell Wilson. It was a Friday night. I'll never forget it. We're in the back of the room at the VMAC, and we're like, what? What? The short guy from Wisconsin? What? What are you talking about? Like, they just signed Matt Flynn. This makes no sense. But, yeah, you're always going to have that reaction. And, you know, when you the Love thing I find really funny, because sometimes the GM and the personnel guys and the scouts, maybe they know more about the team than, I don't know, the present and current quarterback. Last I checked, that was a team that was the number one seed in the NFC this year, and they were the number two seed, I believe, last year, right? So, okay, they had a pretty good roster set up already. Like, they were kind of in the same situation that Seattle was for all those years, where they could just take a flyer on a guy. You know, like, and rightfully so. Listen, you know, draft picks like Christian Michael, you know, Malik McDowell and others, bad draft picks. We all agree, right? Bad draft picks. Yeah. Are those really draft picks they make if they aren't already stacked? Like, when you're, you're holding, you have a full house, but you're going to still see what's going to come down, right?
Well, I'm not. This is what we've talked about. They were in a position where they could take what they would consider some lottery picks, some lottery tickets. We already feel good about where we are, so why don't we see if we can find lightning in a bottle? If we can grab one scratch ticket and win $50,000.
Yep.
And I've praised them for it. I think there is some value to that. So there, it makes a little bit of sense. But if you miss on a bunch of them, then all of a sudden you have and 4 years of nothing to show for the first couple rounds. And that's when you get yourself in the position they're in now, which is not great.
Not great at all. I'd almost think it was maybe not so much a lotto ticket. I think it was more like a pull tab. Like, you had no chance to win with some of those guys. I'm sitting at the Playmore Tavern in Maple Valley, and I got $20 worth of pull tabs in front of me. That's Malik McDowell.
See, now you're making me want to go back and listen to some of the things that they said about these guys when they drafted them.
We think Malik McDowell's like a pull tab. Like, he might be awful, but you never know. We could hit the $10,000.
How about John Schneider on why Malik McDowell fell in the draft?
The inconsistencies in his play. You see dominant tendencies, and then you see some things where some games where he just didn't play quite as hard. Now, if he was more consistent in his play, he would have been a top 10 pick if he was completely dominant all the time. So he needs to learn how to not pick and choose.
Did he learn?
He's dominant on the streets, beating up cops. About it. I'm telling you, he's a pull tab. Christian Michael might have been more of a lottery ticket. I think Malik McDowell was a pull tab. He had no chance to win with that one. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. Check in with Aaron Torres. You can comment. We'll get to your text at 2:30 today, 49451. That is the Kevin Shockey Memorial text line.
Rest in peace, me.
49451. Aaron Torres next.
It's time for our weekly conversation with senior writer at FoxSports.com, Aaron Torres. Brought to you by your local steel dealer. If you want power and reliability, you want a steel. To find a dealer near you, visit SteelDealers.com. Now with Aaron Torres, here's Ian Furness.
And with that, here we go. Aaron Torres joins us weekly visit. We're moving Aaron around a little bit. We're going into the Thursday mode, heading into the college basketball weekend and for the rest of the season. A lot going on around the world of college sports, man. Aaron, first of all, buddy, how are you? How are things?
Oh man, everything's great. I love college football, and we may still have some college football to talk about depending on if Caleb Williams ever actually commits to a college. But this was the week where it just felt like, okay, like, we're full speed ahead. Football's officially in the rearview mirror. We're basically done with transfer portal stuff, and it just kind of hit me like it's here. And I think even talking to you last week, when you're like, what are we, about 6 weeks away from Selection Sunday, it really sunk in that we're getting really, really, really close.
And there was an incredible weekend of college basketball. We got another good weekend coming up as well. Actually, I do want to hit one thing now that I think of it with college football before we move on to the hoops world. And I know you had a conversation on your podcast with Bruce Pearl, who's kind of the guy this week after what happened last weekend. Travis Dye ends up going from Oregon to USC. I mean, USC is loaded, crazy loaded right now, aren't they?
Well, they've cleaned up in the portal, but I think it's two things. And it's funny because the top two portal winners right now, if you go by the 24/7 ranking strictly on the portal, it's LSU and it's USC. And I don't think it's a coincidence. I think both of those rosters were kind of I think the rosters clearly didn't live up to expectations. You have a lot of recruiting misses. You have a lot of, players that didn't work out. You have some players that transferred after the coaching change. That seemed to happen a lot at LSU, where there were like literally probably a dozen kids that transferred. We saw the bowl game where they had 40-something scholarship players.
Yeah.
But then also, late to the party, both had small 2022 recruiting classes. They did well with the players that they got, but you only had – I think USC only signed about 5-6 guys. I think LSU was a little bit more, about 12 or 13. But clearly, this is the new norm, and so it's weird because, you know, I know in Pac-12 country, there's a lot of like, oh my goodness, is the rest of the Pac-12 now USC's just recruiting base now, you know, like are the other 11 Pac-12 rosters. But, you know, I think this was something that was kind of out of necessity, and this is the new world that we live in. And so, you know, I think this is also, by the way, why coaches probably aren't going to be as afraid going forward if they believe that they're heading to a better situation to take those opportunities, because you can flip the roster quick. So Travis Dye was the headliner, but I think in total USC has about 10 or 11 transfer commits. Again, I think that's in part because they only signed about 7 or 8 high school kids to this point. I don't think they're going to be, you know, 12, 13 guys in the portal every year, but no doubt to your point, Ian, they've really gotten the guys that they wanted out of that portal this offseason.
Aaron Torres joining us here on the Beacon Pulling Hotline, brought to you by local steel dealers. All right. Before I go to the SEC, which is now a basketball conference, at least with Auburn and Kentucky, and watching what was going on, Alabama losing at one the other night was tough. But, boy, in your neck of the woods, just a couple nights ago, and fans were finally back at Pauley Pavilion, and how about UCLA just taking Arizona really effectively to the woodshed?
Yeah, I was texting with somebody on staff yesterday after the game, and it really felt like that was kind of a don't forget about us game. You know, UCLA is a really interesting – you know, they go to a Final Four last year, and people say, oh, it's only because they were an 11 seed. Well, they were an 11 seed, they got lucky. And obviously there's always luck involved in these things. But if you go back to last season, UCLA was a preseason top 15 or so team. They were the preseason Pac-12 favorites. Their best player, Chris Smith, gets hurt. And it really took them about 2-3 weeks to kind of figure things out last year. This year, they started out, they're playing well. They have probably their best performance of the season at Marquette, and they get shut down for about 5 or 6 weeks because of COVID. Add in on top of that another 2 or 3 weeks where they're essentially not having any home court games at all because you're either on the road or you're playing in front of no fans at Pauley. I think people just forgot about them. And so, yeah. To your point, Ian, you know, the crowd, there's no doubt it was a factor. There's no doubt that Mick Cronin, I know, is excited to have people back in that building. But also, I just think it was kind of a confluence of events where I think they had a lot more to play for at this point than Arizona did, as weird as it sounds. Not saying that somebody doesn't want to win that game. But, you know, I just think that it was kind of there. Everybody's talking about Arizona in Pac-12 country. Everybody's talking about all these other teams. Don't forget about us. We just made a Final Four last year. And now we'll see if they can kind of continue the momentum now that fans are back in the stands. Really excited to see them in the coming, couple days. But they also, by the way, just because of the quirks of the schedule, go play at Arizona next Saturday in a return game. This game on Tuesday was supposed to be played over the Christmas holiday. It got postponed because of COVID. So short turnaround to see Arizona. But to your point, I mean, I think we kind of made this about Auburn and about Kentucky and Baylor and maybe a little bit of Arizona and Gonzaga and one or two other teams. And I think UCLA put everybody on notice the other night, like, wait a second now. We just made a Final Four. We return everybody, and we feel really good about the guys that we got on our roster, too.
Aaron Torres joining us. I'm going to go to Auburn in a second. Let me say one more thing with the Pac-12. Oregon goes down and sweeps the Southern California schools. Again, no fans, but they go down and beat UCLA and USC. Then they lose to Colorado inexplicably. And I mean, Colorado's not an awful basketball team, but that just – Pac-12 basketball, to me, it screams Pac-12 football. Like, you might have one or two really good teams, elite teams, but then the other guys are going to beat each other up. I mean, Oregon on track maybe after being shut down as well to go ahead and maybe make a run towards the tournament too, and then you lose to Colorado. You can't do that.
Well, I agree certainly with that middle to bottom pack, and you know, that's something we see, like you said, on a week-to-week basis in college football where even this past year, Oregon State, Washington State, when Rolovich left, they were still competitive. Arizona State had ups and downs. And so really it was outside of maybe the Arizona Wildcats and kind of when it all fell apart late for the Washington Huskies, just about everybody else was competitive on any given weekend. I mean, even USC, they took some really bad losses, but they had some really dominant wins as well. And so with Pac-12 basketball, I do think those two at the top are pretty clear, UCLA and Arizona. USC, to its credit, basically wins all the games it should. They have yet to play either UCLA or Arizona, so we'll see what happens when they play them. But Oregon's kind of that perfect example. Is they obviously have the talent to go to Pauley Pavilion, and if you want to call it a road game, if you want to call it more of a neutral court feel, whatever. But they still had to beat UCLA in Pauley Pavilion on the road, and oh, by the way, 2 days later, beat USC as well. So, you know, Oregon's won because Altman has been so aggressive in the portal. It always takes a little bit longer for him to figure it out. But to your point, Ian, I thought it was figured out, and then they just lose the other night. So we'll see if there's depth behind that top two. Again, I think USC's closer to that 5-6-7 range than they are to the top two. But we'll see in the coming weeks, and we'll see how many bids it ultimately results in the NCAA tournament.
Just got a couple minutes left, so let me just hit you with this, and that would be the Auburn win last week against Kentucky. I know you have Bruce Pearl on the podcast. Pump the podcast up, but give me a little teaser for it. Are you telling me, I think I saw you tweet this, that Bruce Pearl, the number one team in the country, first time Auburn's ever been number one in the country, leapfrogging Gonzaga, and mostly just because of the quad one win situation, Gonzaga, you know, whatever, they'll still be a one seed more than likely, but that maybe Bruce Pearl could be courted by other schools and have to leave, not have to, but maybe decide to leave Auburn?
Well, I think Bruce Pearl is or will be very soon courted by other schools. You know, there was a report that even came out today as we speak here on Thursday afternoon, that, you know, that Louisville has already reached out. Now, I find it very funny, Ian. We've been in this business a long time. It came from an Auburn reporter. So, you know, it's funny that a Louisville reporter wouldn't be on that. So it makes me believe that maybe Bruce Pearl wants this story out. I just asked him. I mean, Louisville's open. Louisville's a great job. Maryland's open. Maryland's a great job. You know, your name's going to pop up. What do you say about your name popping up? And you know, he gave me a pretty straightforward answer of, you know, in this business, when you're doing really good, they think you're going to leave. And when you're doing bad, they want you to leave and they try to force you out. And so he says, you know, I kind of just take it day by day. I've been doing this a long time. But, you know, I think what's changed, Ian, even in just the time that I've been covering college sports, is that, you know, I don't believe that there are – that the great jobs, especially in basketball, where, listen, basketball, one good transfer portal class, you can completely flip your program. You know, Arkansas, you know, went to an Elite Eight in year two under Eric Musselman. They hadn't been to a Sweet 16 in 25 years or something like that. Alabama went to a Sweet 16 in year two under Nate Oates last year. So with basketball, I think what's interesting is there's so much money at the Power 5, Power 6 in basketball level now that, you know, I get the idea of great jobs and it just means more to certain fan bases. I don't know that in 2022 there's that much of a difference between Auburn and Maryland. That sounds silly. Auburn had never made a Final Four before Bruce Pearl. Maryland won a national championship this century. They made, you know, I think something like 10 Sweet 16s, you know, 3, 4, 5 Elite Eights, 2 Final Fours in their school history. Louisville's won 3 national championships in their school history. But if you're at a place that you like, I think what I guess what I'm trying to say is in 2022, especially in college basketball, when you're at a place that you like, it's about just making sure that you continue to kind of, I don't want to say keep pressure on the administration because that sounds like a negative thing. But, you know, I guess what I would say is as long as you feel like your administration is giving you every tool that you need to compete at the highest level, I don't think it's going to be easy to pry a Bruce Pearl away from Auburn, a Nate Oates away from Alabama. You know, these jobs that would have been considered quote unquote second tier even 7, 8, 9 years ago. Why can't you win big at Alabama in 2022? Why is Alabama a worse basketball job than Louisville in 2022? So Pearl's name has popped up. There have been reports already. He said on my podcast, he just kind of takes it day by day and he kind of blocks out the outside noise. I don't think he's going anywhere. I just think it's interesting where we are in this world in college athletics now, where the money's so good. As we talked about, even in football, the transfer portal, you can flip a roster so quick. You don't need to go to a Kentucky or a Duke to get great players anymore. You really don't.
No, and I think that's the big point. And just look at that atmosphere. He did make Auburn great a basketball school. I mean, that atmosphere was unbelievable. Why would you go somewhere else where maybe the expectations are different and higher when you can have success there? At Aaron Torres Pod is one Twitter account. That's where you can find the podcast. Aaron_Torres as well. We appreciate you every week, my man. We'll talk to you in 7 days' time.
Ian, thank you. Better soon. Get in studio. We'll talk soon, okay?
I'm out. I'm out of jail as of today. That's Aaron Torres. We'll take a break. Come back. Daily Power Play coming up next.
Malkin shoots one in on goal. Deflection. They score! It's Crosby!
In front, Kucherov. Score!
This is the Daily Power Play.
What a blast from Nathan McKinnon, and there's a power play goal.
Now Ian Furness on Sports Radio 950.
This is the battle of Alberta we've been waiting for.
KJR.
Landeskog over for Mikko Rantanen across the Bruins line. Rantanen's shot deflected wide. Kadri sends it back for Rantanen underneath his skates. Marchand trying to pinch, turns it over. Nichushkin, near side Kadri, throws it back door. Score! Oh, captain! My captain! 36.5 seconds to go in the third. And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, this is a tie hockey game. Kadri, what a look for Landon Skog, a one-timer high on Ullmark. And the answer is yes, there's mile-high magic left. Kadri, his second assist of the game. Landon Skog looks to the sky. And the Avalanche have fought and clawed back to tie this game with under a minute to go.
That's not real. That can't be real. That's you made that highlight up, right?
A little over the top. But, you know, it's exciting.
Gabriel Landeskog, goal and assist, two-point game. That goal was the game tying with 37 seconds left in regulation against the Boston Bruins for the Colorado Avalanche last night. Our daily power play, Cale Makar, he scored the game winner. Why wouldn't he? He was on a power play. Avalanche win again. They've won 17 in a row at home. They're 13-0-1 in the month of January. Is that good?
Ian, I defer to you on hockey things, but my unintelligent, uninformed hockey opinion is that, yes, that is good. How'd I do?
Yeah, I think you did well. Yes. I think that's good. I think it's the opposite of dry January. 13 wins is really good. Really, really good. Yeah, man, that's crazy. They win last night. That's our goal. I watched the third period in the overtime. Colorado, man. Oh, baby. They are really, really good. And they did so without Nathan MacKinnon. He got hurt in the game, left the game early. They called a five-minute major on the hit. It really wasn't that bad of a hit. In fact, Landeskog, to his credit afterwards, says, yeah, man, Taylor Hall hit him, but it was actually his own stick that hit him and cut him open. But hopefully he's okay when it's all said and done. But crazy. Unbelievable. Ending to that game last night. Avalanche win. Also last night, how about your friends and mine? The Chicago Blackhawks. 8 goals against the Detroit Red Wings. 8-5 victory. Who says they don't score in hockey anymore, huh? Who says they don't score anymore? Big game last night. Drew Doughty also is going to skate in his 1,000th NHL game tonight. When they take on New York,
you know,
over at UBS Arena. That's a crazy 1,000 games for Drew Doughty tonight. He's a defenseman. He plays the game the right way.
Stupid, uninformed opinion here on hockey things. I like how they say skates in his, like, I mean, like, he's not playing in the game. He's just skating.
He's like, just going to take a skate, buddy. He's just going to take a leisurely skate.
It just seems fun. I'm going out for a jog. Well, no, you're sprinting. This is the 100-meter dash. Yeah, I'm going out for a jog. Yeah, I'm going to go play a hockey game. No, I'm just going to go skate.
What? Just going to take...
Am I alone here? Am I the only one that thinks that's weird?
No. Yeah, you are. By the way, how about this last night? The Calgary Flames beat Columbus 6-0. And last night, Calgary, a franchise record, whether it be the regular season or the playoffs, they had 62 shots on goal last night.
Holy crap.
62 shots on goal last. That's insane, man.
Jeez.
That's like triple what some teams will have in one game. 62 shots on goal last night. That Columbus is weird, man. I thought they were good when we saw them play earlier this year back there in Ohio. But, 6-0 was the final last night. I just want to look at that. I want to see what the shots were. Oh, here we go. Shots on goal by period. Wow. 16-23-23.
Boy,
62
well
total.
Spread out, too.
23, and so 46 shots on goal in the last two periods. That's crazy. That is nuts. That's a hell of a night. And they only had 3 power plays. That's what's even crazier. They only had 3 power plays, and they had 62 shots on goal. All right. Kraken tonight, by the way, taking on your friends and mine, the Pittsburgh Penguins. Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and company. That game is a 4 o'clock start. It's a 3 o'clock pregame, 3:30 pregame, right? 3 o'clock would be good. Ask Ben if he wants to start at 3. Is he there?
I will
is
check he? With him. Yeah, I'm sure he'd be happy to.
Actually, he's not there. He's probably out at – is he at the
No,
bar?
he's at 32 this weekend on Saturday. I got to check. On Sunday and Tuesday, he's at the 32, but he's in studio here.
He's in studio today. 3:30 pregame for that. We'll check in with Mike Ben. All right. Speaking of the Kraken, Dave Tomlinson is going to join us in a second. Do we play it one more time or not?
Ah, boy, this is pretty close. I don't. I'll leave it up to you. This is almost too much of a layup. I think.
Yeah,
but it's your call.
I think. No, you know what? It's a gimme. If you listened earlier, you know what Dave Tomlinson had to say. We'll ask for it here in a few minutes. We're going to give away $50 to the Beardsley Public House. Your chance to win $50 Beardsley Public House for the line that Dave used this week on a broadcast. We played it in the open of the show today. So we'll give you a chance to win that $50. We'll check in with Dave Tomlinson, the color analyst for the Seattle Kraken, coming up next.